It is one of the most studied battles of history, and it took place in 216 BC. Carthage's stunning victory over Rome at Cannae was brutal, brilliant, and entirely unexpected. The Carthaginian commander, Hannibal, enveloped a larger Roman army and annihilated it. Rome lost more men in that one day than the United States lost in Vietnam. And Cannae changed the world, but again, maybe not in the way you expect. In a new book, Robert L. O'Connell traces the history of Rome's wars with Carthage and why the brilliant Hannibal could win so many battles and yet still lose the war. And Robert O'Connell joins us now from the studios at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Neil. It's nice to be here.
If you have questions for Robert O'Connell about Carthage's victory over Rome or Hannibal and his unfortunate elephant addiction, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Robert O'Connell, you write that Hannibal was a genius at military tactics, but that he really should have known from the very beginning there was no way he was going to win.
That's really true, Neil. Carthage was essentially a naval power. And Hannibal was a land general through a sort of odd turn of circumstance. And he was invading a country that was basically strange territory. And it had huge manpower resources, which Carthage didn't have. And actually, the Carthaginians weren't that enthusiastic about this particular war. So they only reinforced Hannibal one time with a small contingent in the entire time he was in on the Italian peninsula, which was 13 years.
13 years that Hannibal was going around the countryside of Italy. Well, for much of it, he was pretty much bottled up in the south. But nevertheless, he hoped all of that time and believed that Rome's allies, its other states there in Italy, would desert the oppressor and rally to his cause.
He did. And one of the problems, if you can fantasize that Hannibal looked at Rome's alliance structure through an X-ray and all he saw were the bones, what he really needed was an MRI that would have shown the connective tissue. And that connective tissue were the personal relationships that Rome established between its own leading citizens and the leading citizens of its allies, the client patron-client relationships that were that held the Roman alliance together, and he never fully understood its strength. So he was unable to break it, even though technically he won battle after battle.
Indeed, really only lost the last battle, but it turned out you could win a dozen victories over Rome and not win the war, and if you lose one, you're toast.
Pretty much. That was pretty much one of the reasons that the Romans made the terrible mistake of bringing such a huge army to Cannae, is they believed if we beat this guy once, he's finished. But in the end, they were actually right, but it took an awful long time, and it took time for them to develop a general good enough to beat Hannibal. And when that general, interestingly enough, wanted to invade Africa, where Carthage was, to draw Hannibal off, the powers that be at Rome didn't want him to do that. They wanted him to sort of stay in Italy and watch Hannibal. And because he was so popular, this fellow's name was Scipio Africanus or Publius Cornelius Scipio, he was able to actually force a decision to let him invade Africa. But then they said, yeah, but we're not giving you an army. And what was fascinating was he went to Sicily to stage the invasion and built out of the survivors of Cannae a new army that eventually beat Hannibal. What was interesting about this is how did these survivors get to Sicily? They were essentially, after they lost the battle, the Romans were so mortified that they actually banished these guys to Sicily as garrison troops, and there they stayed for 13 years.
The ghosts of Cannae, and
that's the title of
your book. Of course, Scipio was himself a survivor of Cannae.
He was, and he understood that these survivors were in no way cowardly or in no way at fault. They'd actually fought their way off the battlefield in desperate circumstances, and they were as brave as any other Roman soldiers. And yet, they had been stigmatized by the Roman Senate.
We're talking with Robert L. O'Connor about his book, Ghosts of Cannae, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Jonathan is on the line from Trenton, New Jersey.
Hello.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, I had a question. I read a diary of a Roman soldier, and it suggested that Scipio had poisoned Hannibal's elephants. Do you know anything about that?
Scipio had poisoned Hannibal's elephants?
Mm-hmm. He had used some military tactics to sort of render them useless, but he also had sent spies to poison his elephants.
Well, I hadn't heard that story before, but I tend to doubt it under the grounds that Scipio probably understood that actually Hannibal's elephants were his own worst enemy. One of the problems with panzer pachyderms is that initially they seemed like great weapons to the Carthaginians, who weren't great soldiers. These things could go out on the battlefield and sort of squash Romans at will. But the problem was these beasts were easily panicked and frequently squashed Carthaginians too. So usually it was a disaster with elephants. And,
by the time of Cannae, the elephants that had come across the Alps with Hannibal had all died. Yet
they'd all died.
When he went back to Africa to defend Carthage at the Battle of Zama, he recruited new hordes of elephants.
He did. He had an unfortunate penchant for elephants. But there was also the problem that he was basically pulling an army together out of three separate forces that he understood only his own relatively small army would fight really well. The other forces that he got for the Carthaginians and Numidians, he understood were not that great. So he tried to mass the whole thing with a huge number of elephants. Carthage had a lot of elephants because these things called bush elephants, which weren't quite as big as Indian or African elephants, but they were a good size, were fairly prevalent in North Africa then. They're extinct now. Mm-hmm. But I think that probably he got a lot of half-trained elephants, too. So these elephants were even more of a disaster than usual for Carthaginian armies.
Jonathan, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Dennis in Aguadilla in Puerto Rico. The legacy of Hannibal's excursion through Spain lives on today, at least in Puerto Rico, where names like Anibal, Hannibal, Amilcar, Hamilcar, Abdulio, Abdul, Omar, Ishmael, and the surname Cartagena, Carthage, are fairly common. Nevertheless, this little quirk of cultural history is apparently lost on most of its heirs. Let's see if we go next to Sherry. Sherry with us from Portsmouth in Virginia.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
My question is about how the professor feels the best way is to connect past history, ancient history, to current day lives, which is the work that I do here in Virginia in terms of our local Virginia American history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want me to try to answer that?
Yeah,
or is there
I'd
more
like
to
you
your
to.
Question?
Yeah.
I'd say that I'd like to address that two ways. One is I think it's really one of the things I'm trying to do in The Ghosts of Cannae is to emphasize more narrative history. I've mainly written analytic history, and I've come to feel that human beings are really storytelling beasts, and people come to history for narrative. And I think that's slipped away from us to some degree, and I hope that there seems to be a new trend to write more narrative that will make people read history, which then hopefully it will be more relevant to their daily lives. In terms of the specifics of this book, one of the things I really feel strongly about is that the horrible treatment of the survivors of Cannae, the Roman Senate didn't treat veterans well. And indeed, within two centuries, the veterans became more loyal to the generals than they did to their own government because this trend persisted. And it really did lead to the collapse of the Roman Republic and the beginning of Roman emperors. So you take these things sort of selectively. Neil, at the beginning of the interview, talked about Hannibal as winning all the battles but losing the war. Again, we have an excellent military, which has performed well recently in a number of conflicts, but the political results aren't there. So I think you can draw some of these analogies. As Mark Twain said, history seldom repeats itself, but frequently it rhymes.
Very much so. And I thank you very much for that saying that, because when we teach history in public schools, what we get are people being taught by talking about lectures about dead people and dates, which I love history, and that makes my eyes glaze over. So the idea that we, you know, use the narrative as a way of engaging people in this history, as a way of also helping them understand current day issues, is, I think, imperative and easily done using the theater arts. So that's my plug for that, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Sherry. It is also interesting that both of these men either modeled themselves deliberately to some degree, and we're talking about Scipio and Hannibal, or were modeled by their admirers after Alexander the Great.
Yeah, I really do think that that's been somewhat underestimated, just the enormous impact that Alexander had on the Mediterranean basin, not just in the Greek world, but also in Italy, and also even in Carthage, which is essentially a Phoenician, or you could call the Carthaginians probably Phoenicians on steroids. But all these people seem to have tried to model themselves on Alexander. Hannibal, the very act of bringing his army over the Alps was something of a stunt. It sort of one-upped Alexander. He just crossed the Hellespont.
And Scipio could lead an army of tens of thousands through the snowy passes of the Alps, while barbarians were shattering these lines with boulders and leading him into traps.
Right.
And it's interesting, though, it is in Spain. How much of the story happens in Spain is fascinating. But part of it, when Scipio is first there, and one of the tribes, after a great victory over the forces of Carthage, one of the tribes wants to declare him king. And he says, no, king, that would go over very badly in Rome. We have very bad experience with kings. Call me imperator.
Right. It's the first time a Roman general had been called imperator, and it got the attention of the Senate. The Senate, when Scipio came back from this great victory in Spain, which was very important because Spain was the home base of Hannibal and his family, as well as the Carthaginians. When he came back, the Senate looked very suspiciously at him, and this statement of calling him imperator was brought up in the debate, since one of the reasons they didn't want to give him an army to invade Africa.
Well, it would be not the last time imperator would be used to describe
Roman
general. Robert O'Connell, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
Robert L. O'Connell's book is called The Ghosts of Cannae. You can read about how the Roman historian Polybius described the Battle of Cannae at our website. That's at npr.org. He joined us from the studios of the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.